Welcome to Jessica Miles, the podcast, where each week we'll discuss my experiences as a professional spiritual medium, intuitive healer, and mentor. I'll be sharing what I've learned while developing as a psychic medium and facilitator of ancient healing modalities and much, much more. You were born with this innate ability to communicate and co-create with the unseen realms of the universe. This podcast is for those on a path of self-discovery and spiritual development, seeking grounded and practical tools to feel deeply rooted into spirit. I'm your host, Jessica Miles. Now let's dive into today's episode. Hello, Kristen. Welcome back.
Oh, hello, hello. I feel like we do need to share just with the audience that we just got done having a little reading with the spirit world. I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, and Jessica's in California, and there's some communication going on. So we had kind of a nice little time of talking about earth spirits, which brings us to the element of earth, which is what we're talking about today with the sign of Taurus. But
I know that was actually really fun. Cause like I said, I've never been to New Orleans and yeah, just tapping in. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is definitely different energy. Wow. You gotta be prepared for that.
Gotta be prepared.
I didn't wear the right outfit for that today.
So how are you? How is Aries season for you?
Oh, you know, it's so funny. I was sitting here before and I was like thinking about Aries season. Oh yeah. It started out really good. I was feeling really good. I was wearing that red lipstick. A lot of fun things happened. I got a lot of really cool invitations that gave me the opportunity to step up and be like in leadership by myself. Cause you know, I do collaborate quite a bit. And yes. So lots of invitations to host classes, to host workshops. And I said yes to the ones that felt in complete alignment. So that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And then also my workouts, as you know, I've been working out with my trainer and really leaning into the heavy lifting. I felt like an animal. I was like, whoa. And he's like, wow, you're really strong right now. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening. Just pulling these weights and the sweat. Oh, this feels so good. And then working with different foods. I was trying to be really mindful of eating warmer foods and drinking warmer drinks and playing with those spices. I think I sent you a picture. You were in class one day and I never put smoked paprika on my hard-boiled eggs. And I just realized that I had done it. Yeah. You know, so again, it wasn't even a lot of the stuff I wasn't even being mindful of. It was just, I would look down and I'm like, oh, look at all those chili peppers in my meal. Or, you know what I mean? Just like, yes, just how yes. Aries was definitely making its presence known, or even Mars making its presence known. And I definitely caught myself getting a little hot. So, yeah. You know, there was this one moment where Paul's an Aries moon, and I think I'm a progressed Aries moon right now. Mm-hmm. And he came in super hot and I came in super hot. And at the exact same moment, we both go, what are we doing? Cause it wasn't like we were arguing about something one of us didn't agree with. It was just who wants to be heard louder? Who needs to be louder in this moment? So that was a kind of funny moment that we had where I was like, okay, that's hilarious. Thank you, Mars, for coming in and reminding me of how mean I can be. I sat with Trish. I think I messaged you. She did this incredible ceremony and, you know, she's of indigenous blood. And so she led this really beautiful fire ceremony and cacao ceremony. There was just like all this like stuff falling into my lap and the invitations that were happening that felt really, really good. And so, but I will say the last week, I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. I guess we could say I had too much fire in my throat. Like all of a sudden my ears, my nose, my throat, like everything got activated. My eyes were just bright red and itchy and tearing. And I was like, gosh, is it allergies? I've never really had seasonal allergies. I know as we get older, things can shift and change. And so I was taking allergy medicine, just all these things were happening. And then Paul got sick. And I think it's been like 10 days. And as of yesterday, I was like, oh, I'm finally feeling like a human being again. Yes. Well, one thing I did want to share with you that I thought was really interesting. I've been working with this woman for spinal energetics. I don't know if you've ever heard of spinal energetics, but
I haven't, but I've seen you posting about it on your Instagram.
Yeah. And it's just, I'm somebody who travels outside of my body quite a bit, and me learning how to remain in my body has definitely been a practice over the years. Mm-hmm. And so I've been really playing with somatic therapy just to sort of, you know, reconnect with my body in a different way. And it was so funny that I had two sessions during the season, and each time she was playing this very like tribal, like boom, boom. And I was like, oh my God, that's great. This is exactly what I needed. But what came through one of the sessions, and she doesn't talk during the session. She really allows you to go on your own experience, and she'll share things a little bit here and there, but she really lets you just have your own journey. But I had the craziest experience, and I thought, oh wow, this probably has to do with my Aries, especially in the eighth house. I saw a multitude of, if I want to call them past lives, but they were actually being presented to me as just fragments of myself in different dimensions, different timelines at the exact same time. Like that's kind of how it came through. But it was a lot of pain and suffering and just being so flipping tired from being in battle and being in war. And just, I just kept seeing all of these versions of myself in a male body where I was just brutally, like just my body was, you know, injuries, and I was just fighting and I was dragging. And I had that in each life. I had that same sense of, I'm just tired. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And then I saw the last life where it was so visceral. I could feel that I had an injury that went across my forehead and took out my right eye and all the way down to my jaw. And I could kind of see out of my left eye, and I was aware that I was going to die. Mm-hmm. And this man was standing over me, and this is very graphic, but he like was trying to take my heart out of my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so visceral. And she ended up saying something in the session. She goes, oh, this is, you're really clearing out some past life karma and energy through your field. She goes, I just see you. And she just started describing what was happening. I'm like, yep, that's happening. But anyways, when I got out of that session, I was like, oh wow. So a lot of heart healing, but I have like an incision on my left breast.
Mm-hmm.
That evening, it was on fire, the scar. And I didn't put the two and two together. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, okay. I thought it was irritated because maybe it was something I wore. And then for 3 days after, it was sort of raised and hot and irritated. And then it finally dawned on me, that's that Aries energy that I was processing through my eighth house. Like that was freaking cool.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Wild.
And it's, yeah, a lot of themes around the more destructive nature of fire, Aries, Mars came through. It, for me, I felt it come through over the course of that Easter weekend. So when we think about where Easter falls, it falls on the first lunation following, it actually falls on the first Sunday following a certain lunation. So it's like, it's kind of like Good Friday landing on a Venusian holiday or a Venusian day, I should say, and how that Good Friday then leads to Resurrection Sunday, where it's, you know, he has risen, where it's the Christian Easter celebration. But really, there is older pagan traditions that are associated to that Friday through Sunday following that lunation of April that or March that, you know, ignites that sense of destruction and resurrection and death and rebirth cycles. And it's like, it's that churning, that masculine, that fiery force of breaking things down, destroying certain things in order for new things to begin. Like I felt the same way through the course of Aries season. Like it started out and there was this sense of exuberism and optimism and positive energy, that sense of yes, like fire energy, let's get to it, let's take action on all of the things. And then over the course of that particular weekend, that sense of something destructive kind of coming through, that sense of destructive energy coming through and bringing forth the more philosophical conversation of what it means to create versus what it means to destroy, and how the two have to work together in order to do the thing. You know, I was talking about it with one of my clients about, like, in order for the house to get built, the tree has to be cut. In order for the roads to form and allow access and paths to other to means of travel, you know, the edges of the mountain have to get, you know, deconstructed and cleared. So it's like how progress or any form of creation, small, medium, big, really does require certain acts of destruction in order for that progress to be allowed. And that's ultimately the sacrifice. You know, that's the concept of the sacrifice, and what is the sacrifice, and is the sacrifice worth it? And to me, it brought forward that theme of, you know, what it means to continuously grow and progress as a culture, as a society, as a country, as a planet, but what's the sacrifice? And all of a sudden you start to sense like is there too much sacrifice? Is there too much destruction and not enough creation? And we're in, you know, tumultuous times anyways, in terms of what's happening across the world and over in the East, in the sense of destructive forces. And I just really felt it come through, that heavy sense kind of weighing you down of like, you know, is progress worth it? Is progress worth all of this sacrifice? And just to really sit with that, I don't know, that kind of inner dialogue and that inner, what sometimes feels to me as a conflict, you know, it's like always weighing the good versus the sacrifice and the growth versus the sacrifice and what that means to be human, because no one really likes to live through those deconstructive times or the times where everything is breaking down and, you know, progress needs to be made. So therefore certain things have to be destroyed. It's like such a, I don't know, it just really plays on a lot of emotional spheres, a lot of psychological spheres, and also a lot of just that sense of, is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh gosh. Yeah. That makes so much sense. Even with what you're saying, having that full circle moment, and I'm processing everything that came forward, even the last few days. I got a message the other day that it came in really strong. I was in my bath in a meditation with my candles, and all of a sudden it was close down your business. And then I started to realize, wait, is that even my information? You know, mm-hmm. The initial thing that came in, it came with a lot of fear and a lot of like certainty. And that's just not the way that I communicate with my higher self or my guides. It's usually, it's an invitation, but it came in so hard. And I was like, whoa, that's kind of fearful. Where did that come from? And what I realized was there was people that were, they had reached out to me later that evening that were feeling that way and they were plugged into my energy. Mm-hmm. But all of those conversations were really anchored in that, I'm just tired. I've been doing this for so long. And is it worth it? Should I just shut down my calendar for 6 months at a time? Like, do I have to be in service mode every single day? Do I have to be in service mode like for 4 months out of the year? This conversation that was happening, oh, it's so true. Where's the scarcity come from?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I think that if I stop doing readings that everyone's just going to disappear? You know, it was a good opportunity to really sit with those deeper questions and those whys. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was definitely something that came through for me as well.
Yeah, it's the sacrifice, you know, it's like everything requires a sacrifice. So it's like, no matter what direction you're going, there's always a sacrifice to be made. Is the sacrifice comfort? Is the sacrifice freedom? Is the sacrifice, you know, liberation? It's like all of these themes of that there is a price to pay. What is the cost? And mm-hmm. it's a strange thing to be human and to sit very connectedly to the spirit world, the traditions, the ancestors, because everyone had such sacrifices and everyone, there was always such a price to pay for everything in order to get us here, what had to be sacrificed and what was the price. And now we're in these times where things are, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, in a very advanced age, an advanced society, an advanced way of living. And what was the sacrifice to that? What is the sacrifice of comfort? And what is the sacrifice of technology? And it's like just these kind of bigger overarching themes of what is the price to pay? And is the price worth it? You know, it's like, what is the cost? And it really does introduce us into Taurus, because Taurus is all about our resources and our sense of security. And so with Aries being this cardinal, destructive, fiery, masculine force, we're now stepping into a fixed earth ruled by Venus, which is the female archetype, the goddess archetype, energy of how, you know, once again, it's like the foundations and the securities that we desire. It's like, what is the cost? What needs to be destroyed in order for those foundations and securities to be established? And the best way to explore Taurus, I think, when I was sitting with it, preparing for our talk today, is to sit with it through concepts around our food systems. You know, it's like, food is something that relates to every person, regardless of their, you know, social status or their, you know, whatever status. Everyone has to eat food, and food is the ultimate form of sustenance. It's all the ultimate form of security. And so it's a really good segue to analyze Taurus and what our value systems are and structures in terms of our security through the analogy or through the meditation of food and how food comes from the earth. Food comes from fertile soils. Food comes through cultivations and systems that ultimately allow for civilizations to flourish. You know, it's like when we think about building structures, that's often given to Saturn and Capricorn, the building of structures. But what is the ground in which the structures are built? That is Taurus. That is the earth quality of Taurus. So it's like when we think about how cities were formed, often they were chosen, the certain locale was chosen based on the fertility of the earth. Is there fresh water by or fresh water nearby? Is the soil rich and dense? Is there, you know, a lot of natural resources? Is there a lot of animals in order to create food? It's like there's all of these things that humans would look to and before they begin to build their structures and build their civilizations. And that is the richness and the abundance of the earth itself in that particular locale. And that really does introduce us to Taurus. I like to think about like in terms of like ancestral practices, for example, mm-hmm. It's like every ancestral practice, every culture had a food source that provided their sustenance. Mm-hmm. So if we think about what that sustenance is, it was the high caloric, high starch, high, usually filled with carbohydrate food that provided energy. And what does it mean to, in terms of the locale, in terms of the region of the area, what foods naturally provided that sustenance for the area? So like, for example, here in the South, we grow a lot of sugarcane. So sugar is a huge part of the agriculture of this part of the South. And there's also a lot of rice fields here. And then they pull from the sustenance of the ocean because we live so close to heavy bodies of water. So it's a lot of shrimp, oysters, fish, seafood in general, but kind of more of the bottom dwelling fish when you think about the crustaceans and the food sources that lie in the bottom layers of the ocean. And those were the food sources that provided sustenance for this particular part of the country. And in other parts of the world, that sustenance is wheat, that sustenance is different forms of grain. Corn is a huge part for certain parts of the world. It's like, so every locale has these food sources that provide that sense of, you know, once again, it's sustenance. It's to be able to give you enough calories in order to sustain your energy sources, to build the structures, to hunt the animals, to provide for your family, and frankly, to also have children. The concepts of fertility is often associated with Taurus. You know, it's like if you were trying to get pregnant or if you were wanting to work fertility types of magic, you would be working with the nature or the landscape of Taurus, as well as the nature and the landscape of Venus. And also with the moon, it's like you would lean into certain planetary configurations as well as sign energies and elemental energies in order to, you know, facilitate a movement of energy inside of the body to lend itself to procreation. But it's like all of these primal needs that humans have really comes down into these lower building blocks of what the earth provides and the resources that the earth provides. And it's those core fundamental elements that you can sit with that really help shape your understanding of what it means to be fixed earth. It's the sustenance. It is the security that the earth in of itself, before any structure or any civilization is built upon it, the earth itself and the importance of that earth. And as humans, we've gotten so far, at least modern humans, we've gotten pretty far away from some of these things. A lot of people are really separated from their food sources and the understanding of food sources in terms of where they live. A lot of people are separated just from the act of cooking in of itself. You know, it's like I personally have been practicing a disciplined practice of scratch cooking. So any type of bread that I eat or tortilla that I eat comes from just flour and water and milk and eggs. And like, I'm making all of that myself to stay away from preservatives. And just some of those simple acts of preparing your own food from a very scratch or very, you know, homegrown place teaches you about the importance of staying connected to our food sources from their very, you know, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for right now, but from their origin, I guess, instead of from the grocery store. Understanding that, man, in order to make a loaf of bread, you have to use 2 cups of flour. And to think about the amount of wheat that it takes to create 2 cups of flour, it's like, what does that field look like? Is that an acre of wheat? Is that 2 acres of wheat? Like, thinking about, you know, things in that way, it's like we've industrialized food so much that I think that it really has caused conflicts of our understanding of, you know, whether we're actually able to sustain ourselves in the direction that we're going, you know, because we've industrialized food. But to take it even one step deeper, though, it's like, how can you avoid those foods altogether? You know,
exactly.
It's like, do you need to eat that thing? Do you need to eat that prepackaged processed food thing? It's like, can you create something that's equally delicious? Because I have a sweet tooth. I like certain sweet items that aren't necessarily considered healthy, but I do feel like it's a whole lot healthier than buying that prepackaged snack food that is giving me the quick fix. At least if I'm making it myself, I'm understanding certain things that go into the creation of it. And therefore it's like, it connects you on a deeper level to where then the thing, once you're eating it, whether it's, you know, sweet muffin, or if it's a cookie or something like that, you are appreciating it on a different level, and it's nourishing you on a different level than if you were just to go buy something out of a box or out of some type of package. So it's like just connecting with food in a different, not a different, but connecting food in its the way that it was originally designed to be connected with is a good way of really sitting with some of these, the deeper energies of Taurus, as well as considering growing food. You know, Taurus embodies the month of the latter part of April and the month of May. And therefore it's like, this is an opportunity for you to plant some seeds, for you to grow some foods in your garden. Even if you have a small urban garden and a patio, it's like thinking about planting that tomato plant or planting that pepper plant and really teaching yourself what it looks like to grow food and what it looks like to grow something from seed or from sapling, and what it teaches you about yourself and about the food source, you know, it in of itself. It's growing food is actually quite difficult.
When you said that, my stomach went, row, row, I'm going to fail this test this month.
It's not easy. And the thing is that plants grow easily, but it's the conflicts that plants face, because we don't grow in, you know, if you were growing native plants in a native environment that had only native species, you wouldn't be dealing with a lot of the pest conflicts that we have to deal with today. But because water sources are polluted and agriculture commercially has infiltrated the soils in certain way that it's weakened it, it has allowed pest infiltration into the mix. And therefore now growing plants, you have to be out there dealing with caterpillars and aphids and bugs and snails and all these kind of pests that want to come in and undermine your harvest. And so it's like, you're getting all these learning curves of dealing with the elements too. It's like, if you have a really dry climate, it's like trying to find proper water or what you can grow in areas that don't have a lot of moisture in the air or moisture in the weather. And same thing, if you have volatile climate where it's heavy, heavy rain and very little sunlight, it's like trying to grow food teaches you a whole lot of things. And it also kind of shapes your understanding of why our ancestors were worshiping the water and worshiping the sun and worshiping the dirt. Like, when we get into the greater concepts of spirituality and polytheistic approaches, and why were they building a temple to the sun, and why were they building a temple to the moon, and why were they worshiping the grain gods, and why were they sacrificing for the water gods? It's like, well, if you grow food, you will learn exactly why our ancestors were praying. Because it's hard. and be, you're vulnerable to the elements and you're vulnerable to things outside of your control. And so in order to sustain, in order to survive, in order to protect your family or to feed your family, you're going to have to do all the right things. But then on top of it, you're going to have to learn how to, the spiritual component of all of that. And I just love how it introduces polytheism, really, you know, when you think about the nature of growing food, you all of a sudden care a whole lot. You care a whole lot about the skies. You care a whole lot about the trees. You care a whole lot about the earth. You care a whole lot about those birds. Like all of a sudden you are tuned in to all of these contributing factors that are going to either make or break your ability to sustain yourself.
Oh yeah. When Paul's family still had their property in Washington on Stony Ridge, I mean, they grew their food, they had their compost, and the amount of work that they put into that property, it was incredible.
Oh. Yeah, I had a grandmother too, that she was a Taurus. You know, she had a Taurus sun, she had Jupiter in Taurus, Mercury in Taurus, her North Node in Taurus. And so she was a super Taurus, and she grew a huge vegetable garden every year. She was raised in poverty. And it's a lot of times when they're, you know, she was born in the Great Depression. She was the youngest of five. She didn't have a stable father figure. So her mother was trying to raise kids and provide in a time where women, you know, you didn't have a lot of stability to begin with, let alone in order as provisional people for their families. And, you know, how that shapes her, how that shaped her entire life, you know, growing your own food. She preserved her own food, canned. She was a scratch cook. So everything she made was from her garden or from food that she had preserved from the garden. She bought only local beef. She only bought local, you know, it's like everything was from that direct environment. She did not rely on anything outside of what provided for her right there on her patch of land, you know. And we grew up in agricultural area of Washington State. So it's like people had their cattle farms, people butchered their pigs, people had their poultry, you got local eggs. Like you could really find local food just by venturing into your community. So being now in an urban environment, it really shapes my understanding of how much those, just that knowledge in general, is being completely lost through time and space into the youth, because there's nothing like that. There's a local community garden here in New Orleans that the couple in her, it's a couple, a husband wife team. I believe it's called Barcello, Barcello. I'm seeing that in my mind's eye. Barcello Gardens. Anyways, they started this community garden in a food desert. And I wasn't even aware of what food deserts were until I had moved to California. And there's parts of California living in LA that are food deserts, to where the only source of food is like gas stations and liquor stores. There's no markets. There's no fresh produce. There's no, you know, and for people who are living in poverty, who maybe don't have a car, who have to walk, it's like there's no direct fresh food sources inside of their community. And it was something that was foreign to me growing up out in rural land and agricultural community. But you know, the whole concept of food, food deserts, the lack of knowledge on how to grow food, how people are trying to revive it and to teach people and to teach young people. It's a huge part of our story. And we live in the comfy zone of supermarkets and things like that, if we are, you know, lucky enough. But at the same time, the land will always provide if you take care of the land. And this is what a lot of indigenous cultures are always trying to teach and always trying to share. It's like, take care of the land, take care of the land, and the land will always take care of you. And I just think that there's so much to learn through the simple act of just putting a plant into the ground and eating from it.
I was just thinking about my poor little Basil.
It's not easy. Like
she's all, Jess.
My grandmother made it look so easy. And I put vegetables, I put them all in my little herb.
You have a beautiful garden. I mean, I love when you post.
I call it Swamparia. Like she turns into a monster. Like she's like this big monster in my backyard that demands my attention and demands I go out and do the things. Like it turns into an entity. Like it turns into an spirit, the spirit of the garden. And
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, no, that's what Candace used to say.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
Paul's
a
mom,
whole thing.
she was like, that's exactly what she would talk about. I mean, she loved being in her garden, and she was, I mean, this woman, she'd be out there 12 hours a day, just, taking care of, the many acres that they had, and, the apricot trees and the apple trees and, all of the corn, and they were surrounded by, just vineyards. She'd be out there all day. So when they were ready to sell, she was like, I don't know what I'm going to do because this has been my life's work. And she went through a whole thing, this whole thing of like, whoa, I don't have anything to take care of, It looks so easy from the outside. I'm like, wow, look at that. But then you realize the amount of hours and the amount of love and the amount of dedication. Like they couldn't travel. They couldn't do all these things because they had to take, tend to their land. And it's really true. And then I think of myself and I'm like, okay, well, what can I do to honor that part? Because I don't know. I don't know how well I'll do it at planting seeds, but we'll check in. I'm going to set that intention to.
I feel like for people who maybe don't have that natural desire, you know what I mean? And who, they don't need to rely on growing their own food sources. You can support it, I think, or at least the concepts of it
Farmers
by
market.
buying local food. You know, it's like going to the farmer's market and buying, cooking things, planning your menu, planning what you're eating in accordance to what is in season and what is in abundance. And to also practice on canning and storing food and what that looks like. It's like it's a very simple process to can your own tomatoes and store them up. And then you have, basically fresh tomatoes that have been properly stored that you can use for sauces and different foods. It's like you can do very simple things that can provide for you. And just to deepen the connection of understanding of what it means to live in accordance to the land versus accordance to the supermarket, because a supermarket is going to be sourcing food from all over the place to make sure that you have tomatoes in that supermarket year round. But it's what it does is it detaches your understanding of knowing that tomatoes actually only grow in this season, in this time frame, and what a fresh, vine ripened tomato actually tastes like. It's like it's so different than a hothouse tomato. You hear people talking about that all of the time. But these are things that I think younger generations of people are going to be losing, because as farming and living in an agricultural community gets further and further out of popularity or appeal to younger generations, it's like, what is going to happen to our food sources? And plus, just what's happening to local farmers, small farms. It's like it's a big topic that a lot of people are trying to raise awareness to, because it really is, if our small farms, continue to struggle and fold under large commercial entities coming in, it's like it really does begin to make our structures, our fundamental foundations of, what it means to be food secure. It really throws in a lot of potentially scary curveballs. And this is something too that with Uranus and Taurus, Uranus had entered Taurus in 2018, and how this destabilization, because that's what Uranus, the planet Uranus, does, is it breaks down structure, it breaks things out of structure. We noticed that in a lot of ways through the pandemic and like the breakdown of the supply chain, like, grocery stores being empty of things, things not being available, things being backed up, things weren't moving around. Like it really, I think it was Uranus's desire to reveal to us, hey, pay attention. Like this is on the table. This is something that you need to look towards for moving on towards the future, because you need to have some deeper understandings of where your food sources are coming from, where wood is coming from, where other resources are coming from, in order to provide you and your stores with the things that you are now purchasing. Like you can't build homes or repair homes if there's no lumber at the lumber yard. It's like, where's the lumber coming from? It's like, how is it tracking across the country? It's just those kind of things that I think that it's very easy to overlook, because you just take it for granted. You just assume that Home Depot is going to have it, right? Home
Oh
Depot
no, it's
is
so
going to have my
true.
lumber, right? Well,
Yeah,
I mean, what happens when you show up and Home Depot doesn't have your lumber?
Well, that happened to us when we bought our desert house. It was during, the pandemic, and it was like, oh, we got to wait for months and months and months for
Yeah.
things to arrive. And then you're like, oh, wow,
It's
this is
a
our
thing.
reality right now.
And so it's like it's a responsibility for parents to, begin to shape some deeper understanding to their children, because it makes the future very vulnerable. The further we get away from these very fundamental understandings of how to provide for ourselves and what it means to provide and what it means to build structures and what it means to have a sense of security, then the more reliant they are going to be on external structures, external institutions to provide them their security, and the writing of that is on the wall. It's like it takes away your sovereignty when you the more reliant you are on the institution, then the less sovereign you are. And as planets begin to shift in the future, a lot of planets are going to be making major shifts. The outside planets like Uranus is going to be moving into Gemini, Saturn's going to be moving to Aries, Neptune is going to be moving into Aries, and Pluto's entering in Aquarius. And it's like all these major shifts are going to very much open up understandings and levels of clarity of what it means to be sovereign and how reliant humans or humanity in general has become. It's going to be an interesting time.
Well, you think too, like what you were saying earlier, just our connection to food. And I mean, I love when my mom cooks because I can feel the energy that she puts into that food and what our intentions are while we're cooking that food. And yeah, if we're just ordering that DoorDash, where is that connection to that peace that we're putting in our body?
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast not that long ago, and they were talking about, or maybe you and I talked about it. I thought it was on a podcast, so correct me if it was you and I having this conversation. But when I was young, Filipino culture is, we eat with our hands. Like I wasn't raised with my mom or my aunt feeding me with a spoon. They fed me with their hands, and they were saying there was an actual connection between eating with your hands and the heart. And the connection to the body and the earth, because you're feeling the vibration of the food, you're putting it into your mouth, you're bringing it towards the heart. I remember I'd be running around the house and she'd be like, "Oh, have a bite," and she'd feed me with her hands. And it was just that's what we did when we were kids. There wasn't a lot of silverware that was taking place. And so yeah, and I go through phases where I want to cook a ton, and then I'll take a break, and then my mom will step in. But there is something to it. There is something very therapeutic, and it does feel like this meditative thing that happens. But I like what you're saying. What did you call it? Scratch cooking?
I call it scratch cooking. It's just like,
Yeah.
I try not to buy anything that's been pre-made on any level. Like I've
Yeah.
made my own tomato soup, and I've always just purchased, I'll go to Whole Foods and get the
Yeah.
organic tomato bisque. It's good, right? But even then, if you start reading the labels, like there's so much, they're just creeping in more and more weird preservatives. Seed oils are a big topic right now on
Oh
people's
yeah, seed
subject of
oils.
people. It's like seed oils is in everything. They're putting it in literally everything. And it's like, what is that? What does that mean? And you're just able to choose the ingredients that you want, and you're able to make it yourself. And then you make an abundance of it, and you can freeze the excess. And once again, it's like learning how to make a lot of something and then preserve it just through freezing or canning yourself. And then that allows you to be eating food that has been made with the very specific ingredients that you want to put inside of your body, because it is frightening. It's just like even buying a loaf of bread, even going to a place like Whole Foods or a higher end market, it's still filled with stuff that it's like, what is that? What is that? What is that? And then you ask yourself, well, no wonder it stays fresh for 2 weeks because it's filled with this stuff. Whereas if you make your own bread, you have to eat it within 2 days. I mean, the third day, it's hard. You're making French toast out of it, or you're turning it into croutons, or you're turning it into something else. Like you have to learn how to circulate and turn over your food in order to not allow things to go to waste. And that's another thing that people can think about. It's like, how much food are they wasting? Like that's a huge, I know that that's something that I've been really guilty of in the past. It's like the moment it starts to look a little, it's like, oh no, it's out. And instead of really thinking about, well, you know, can I still work with it? And I just need to work with it in a different way, or I need to work with it before it gets to that place. So therefore it's like, looks like we're eating cauliflower tonight because cauliflower is going to go bad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And eating in accordance to not allowing food to go to waste versus eating in accordance to your feelings, you know, and eating in accordance to your desires. And what do I feel like eating? So it's like, just thinking about those things. I think it's a really good lesson in Taurus, and it's a really good lesson of helping us stay connected to the foundational and the fundamental needs of what Taurus is trying to teach us, and also what the planet is trying to teach us, and what our food is trying to teach us, and to watch it, how it changes your body as well, and how you feel, and how the emotional center is constantly in communication with the gut and with the biomes of the gut and with the food and the types of food we're eating, and how just cooking from scratch and doing things more mindfully actually changes the way that you feel, think, how well you sleep, inflammation inside of the bodies. I mean, we know all that. People are really smart these days with, you know, the internet and so much information being available, but it's like that fundamental food source is just, it's like, you know, it teaches us so much of what it means to be human. And kind of circling back too with the Aries over Easter, with the Venus Mars energy of Good Friday versus Resurrection Sunday, it's like, it's the fact too that it, being a human requires the eating of dead matter. So it's like, in order for us to live, something has to die. And a lot of times people associate death with just the eating of animals, but animals are plants are very much alive. Like, they would be offended if you didn't realize that you were actually eating something alive in order to sustain your physical body, in order for you to live. And that relationship with death and birth, and the death and creation, destruction and creation, is right there just at your dinner plate when you're consuming a salad. You're eating something that's alive.
Mm-hmm. Amen for all my vegans and vegetarians out there. The debate. You heard it here first.
Yeah, it's like, it's just because they don't have eyeballs doesn't mean that they aren't. You know, it's like anyone that's had any type of transcendent experience with plants will tell you that they are very much alive and very much aware of you. And I actually love talking about plants. I could talk about plants forever just because I've had so many experiences, you know, very spiritual, very, you know, transcendent experiences with plants out in the forest, particularly when I lived in California. I lived right in the foothills of the Angeles Forest, and I was out there studying the plants and working with the plants on a magical, spiritual, animistic level. And plants become very, very, very forward in their personalities when you start to work with them in that way. And they become very, very animated. They're very animated creatures, plants are. And we think that plants are these kind of simple things, right? Like the trees are majestic and the large bodies of water, but the plants are actually the funniest, and they are extremely sentient and intelligent and trying to perpetuate themselves, because, you know, plants are no different than every other living creature on the earth, that they are trying to perpetuate their existence. And that means that they need humans to help cultivate them, and they need humans to farm them, and humans to care about them on some level, so the humans don't destroy them and destroy their ability to survive. So there's a lot of manipulation actually that takes place on the behalf of plants to humans. We think that as humans, we're these kind of superior beings, but the plants are, they've been around a lot longer. Mm-hmm. They're a lot smarter than what we think that they're capable of being.
I did a fun exercise with my kids because I saw a video online somewhere where this woman walked up to a tree and asked it to touch her shoulder, to touch her heart, to touch her forehead. And that, you know, you see the branch just like slowly this like work its way out. And we have this place in Hermosa called the Green Belts, and it's just so beautiful. It's like these beautiful trees and plants. I mean, you literally feel like you're in this magical place in the middle of the beach. And I took my kids there one time, and I was using that practice with them, and they flipped out. They were like, oh my gosh, it's listening to me. And I was like, of course it's alive. And it's just so beautiful, you know, just to be able to see that if we do, you know, just pause for a moment and make that connection to those trees and those plants, and they do provide so much for us and so much clean air and healing. And I do agree with you. They definitely do have a personality for sure. But yeah, they give us so much, don't they?
Well, they and so it's like, they just, it's this thing where it's like, they're providing, they provide food for us. They provide a certain level of sustenance, but they also provide medicine when we think of the medicinal qualities of plants, and they provide nutrients and minerals and vitamins and things that our bodies and our bones need. It's like, we literally need to eat the earth because our bones are made of the earth, and we eat the earth through the plants because they live in the soil and they suck up all the nutrients from the soil and they provide it for us. Like, the relationships that humans have to the earth, that liaison is the plant, is the vegetation. And it's, you know, we just literally, we wouldn't be alive without the plants and without what is provided through them. You know, even if it was earth and human, the plants are the food source. They're the intermediary spirit that allows the bridge between the bedrock of the earth and what it means to have flesh. So it's, I don't know. I find it to be one of those things that I can sit in meditation on it forever and really just kind of go deeper and deeper and deeper into this real plant world and the relationship with the plants and our connections to them and how our bodies, our physical bodies in of themselves, you know, when we think about what the lungs look like and what our blood veins look like and all of that. It's like, it literally looks like plant matter. Like, we look like plants from the inside. So it's just, you know, it's, and we're so far, at least, you know, from my perspective of viewing, you know, the more urbanized and the more high tech that humans get, like, we just lose these connections that ultimately are the very things that make us able to live and breathe and be in our physical bodies and sustain our physical bodies, and how we need to reconnect to some of those practices. And it reintroduces kind of some of these more polytheistic practices where you go out and you spend time in nature, but with the spirit realm of nature, with the spirits of the trees and what that actually looks like and what that means, and to leave offerings to the land and to watch over the water sources and to care about, you know, if the water sources are being polluted or if they are being well cared for. And it's like, to really kind of sit with these very important, powerful themes and to use your eyeballs and to use your firsthand experience to perceive that reality and help gain as much understanding, firsthand understanding as you can, but to allow the spirits of these places to reveal themselves to you and to communicate with you and to help share, you know. And if you are developing a spiritual sense or the ability to speak with the spirit world, it's like these whispers, these feelings, these senses that are very quiet, but the more you spend time in nature, the louder they become, and they begin to interact with you in very real, very powerful ways, you know. And I encourage people to spend time out there, and more importantly, to spend time alone, you know, because you can't hear the tree if you are busy, you know, communicating or talking with other people. It's important to spend time out there just with you and the elements in order to gain that deeper understanding.
That was the message I got this morning, actually, was when I'm on a walk, even with Cedar, to leave my phone at home so that I can really be present. Cause I don't talk on the phone necessarily when I'm walking, but sometimes I'll play music, or maybe I have like a podcast playing in the background. And that was something that came in very clear. I think it was yesterday, or maybe was it this morning? My days are blending. And I was like, oh, okay. And it was weird to leave my phone at home, honestly, because you forget that we're so attached to it. But it actually was really nice because, again, I was getting not only downloads from him, just some information he was sharing with me. I was getting messages from him, but just the insight that comes through when I'm not distracting myself. And I'm somebody who, you know, as constantly tapping in, obviously working with clients and all these things, but I'm not usually tapping in for myself. Like, you know, I leave myself open. Let me put it that way. But what I realized was when I'm in those quiet moments, like even if it was like that 20-minute walk, I got so much information that I wasn't even looking for, that was just like, whew, whew, whew. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Just in that 20-minute walk outside, connecting, you know, and I love, like, I always love, like, when the birds come by and I'm like, oh, okay, what's Crow have to share with me in this moment? Or, you know, and like, they all feel like a gust of wind come and I'm like, okay, the element of air is coming in. You know, it's just like, you really do become aware of how nature is constantly speaking to us. When I was driving to this class that I was leading this morning, I was listening to my two friends communicate with each other on the podcast about different signs and what their signs were and how sometimes they didn't listen to their signs early on in their development. And as they were saying that, this crow flies right past my, I almost hit it. That's how, and I was kind of laughing because crow is a big messenger for me. But I was like, again, I could have been that person that's like, oh, damn bird, you know?
For sure.
Right. It's like, oh, okay. I recognize that crow is coming in. Is this like that little wink of hello? Cause I was kind of thinking about the times where I didn't trust my intuition and that crow came in very loud, gawking outside of my window to remind me of the dream I had the night prior, you know, about, you know, opening up my intuition. And so again, I think that, you know, I love working with earth medicine. I really do enjoy it and I'm craving it. I feel like you and I had talked about this. I feel like Pisces was still that watery element was very still, but like very loud still in my dream space through Aries season. I was just like, wow, I'm over these dreams. I'm ready for some sleep again. Like, I just want to get a good night's sleep again. And last night I even said to Paul, I go, I'm not sleeping in my bed tonight. I'm sleeping on the couch because I feel like I'm surrounded by water because there's a water leak in our bathroom that we're getting fixed. But I almost felt like the water, it was so present in my field and I'm already a very dreamy person. And also the congestion and I'm like, nope, I'm sleeping upstairs. And last night I slept upstairs on the couch and it's the best sleep I've had in weeks because everything has been so active. And so I'm like, oh, I can't wait to just like sink into that earth. I like to visualize myself like planted like a pod in the soil.
Now it's a thing. It's like kind of putting yourself back into just the, I don't know. It's like, sometimes it's like, even when we think about spaces that we are designed to sleep in or relax in, how they can become very noisy with things like our belongings, our physical possessions, our clothes, our shoes. Maybe you have a bathroom attached and then you have all the stuff that's within there. We sort of start thinking about material things and the energy that's attached to those things, how sometimes you're going to go into a place where you are far removed from that, all of those belongings or all of those things. And that's all of the sudden this, you know, this calming or this, I don't know, like a vacation almost from your own life or a vacation from your own energy takes place to where it's like, okay, now I can get that good night's sleep. I feel that like going into certain like hotel spaces, it's like, oh, the sense of like, you're separated now from the noise of your life. You're able to take that break and then you might have the best night's sleep or you might have just that sense of relaxation and decompression because you are removed from the noise and the chatter of your physical environment. I do a lot of energetic cleaning for that very reason. Like I've been doing a lot of energetic cleaning where I just go through, I remove things. It's weird how the clutter sneaks in. We had that conversation when we were talking about the dark houses, how, you know, the physical environment of the sixth house will seep into the psychological environment of the 12th and how it reveals itself in the closets and the doors and the cracks and crevices. It's like, you know, have you cleaned behind the thing? Have you like opened up the drawers, taken it out and like emptied the contents and like shed yourself of the clutter and the excess and how that just completely shifts one's energy and ability to, you know, all of a sudden relax and not have that noise.
Oh yeah. That just happened a few days ago. I have next to my bedside table, I have this like olive wood bowl with all of these different crystals in it. And I keep some essential oils by my bed because I usually rub them on my neck and feet before I go to sleep. But I was sitting there and I just felt like there was so much around my left side. I got to move everything. So I took all of my crystals. I moved everything and I'm going to clean these out. I had to get rid of it. Just felt like energetically, it felt like so much was happening in my left ear and it felt so good to just not have anything on my nightstand except for my lamp.
It's a thing. It's a whole, I think it's, you know, as people who work with the energetic realm and the spirit realm, it's like, just because you gravitated towards something a year ago or 2 years ago or 6 months ago, and you brought it into your field, you brought it into your room and your altar. It's like, it doesn't mean it's going to serve that purpose that you brought it in for forever. Like there is that sense of like, oh, it's done its work and now it can go live somewhere else. Or maybe I pass it on to somebody else. Like that accumulation that builds up is a strange thing that, you know, just because it came in on a certain frequency or it energetically, you know, attuned to that thing and you brought it, it doesn't mean it's going to sit in your field as it did mm-hmm. forever. Like your field is going to change and everything shifts and now it's okay. Now it's time to move on. And I'm always having to contend with that because I have a lot of, you know, I have a lot of planets in the second house, which is universally Taurus's landscape. So it is this connection to the material environment. And a lot of times that can manifest as, you know, holding on to things. You know, it's like the idea of holding on what the earth does. It like grabs on and it holds on to things to where it's like, it's not materialistic in the way that we define materialism generally. It's more of like, I don't know, it almost has a bit of fear attached to it. Like my possessions or the thing makes me feel secure and safe. So I hold on to it versus now it's time to move on. So I have to exercise that regularly in my life. I have to get rid of things because there's always this weird fear attachment to getting rid of things. It's discomfort that manifests in my body of what if I need that someday? Or what if I decide I'm going to come back to that? Or what if, you know what I mean? All of these woulda, wouldas. And it's like, no, you haven't, this was something that came in and you haven't done X, Y, Z with it. So now it's time to move it along and share it with somebody else or, you know, give it away in terms of just kind of putting it back out into the world and allowing it to find its new home. It's like just, you know, continuing the movement of things. And Taurus being a fixed sign, it's like Taurus likes to hold on to things and Taurus has a hard time getting rid of things. And that's why it can manifest in very material, the material accumulation of possessions can be a very Taurus thing.
Well, it looks like I'm going to be cooking more this month. It looks like, well, local fresh food. Organic food.
Local.
I'm going to really take care of my basil plant, and I'm going to attempt to plant my rosemary because those are the two things I use quite a bit, actually, rosemary and basil fresh. I don't know why those two things. And then I'm going to have to do a purge of my material things, which I actually do enjoy doing. I really do. I'm always like, oh, let's just get things out of here.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a lot of space. We just don't. I mean, you know, I buy like two new things and it feels like I've bought 30 new things because we don't have a lot of closet space or drawer space. And so that's good. That's like a nice like purge of, you know, just.
It is. It's always good to evaluate the things and also too to ask yourself like why you're holding on to them. A lot of times you can learn a lot about your growth, your healing, where you're at in life. It's like, why are you holding on to this thing. I've gone through this was in the recent years past, but it's like removing of childhood things. It's like, why do we cling on to childhood things? It's like, oh, it's that thing that was, you know, made for me by XYZ when I was 5 and here I have it. And it's like, well, why do I still need it? It's weird too, because I still have my wedding dress. Do you still have your wedding dress?
You know, actually I do not. I did keep it for a little bit of time. Probably 5 or 7 years.
I still have my wedding dress. I've been married for 27 years. You know what I mean? Like, and the thing is like, I tried to get rid of it when we moved in our last move. And I had a little bit of a mini like panic attack about it because I'm like, what if that's bad? Like, what if it has some sort of residual, like negative juju that's going to come after me? Like I wasn't prepared to actually contend with the emotional response that it gave me, but now it's like, I need to have a ceremony for my wedding dress. It's okay. We can move on. It's like, I don't need to carry this thing around, but it's like our attachments and why we get attached to certain things and why we feel the responsibility to carry things forward. Oh, well, this belonged to my grandmother and therefore I need to keep it forever. Well, do you? Like, these are the questions that people that have a lot of second house energy, a lot of karmic attachment when it comes to materialism, it's like that sense of fear around it, the sense of not having what you need, the sense of vulnerability that's attached to, you know, not having those fundamental needs met and how we cling to things and hold on to things out of those karmic signatures. So that's how it manifests in my world with a person with 5 planets in the second house is I have a fear attached to getting rid of things. Nostalgia is another form of attachment that'll manifest where it's like, you know, because I've had it for this long, I should keep it forever. Or because it's associated with my childhood, that means I should keep it forever. And it's like, no, no, nostalgia is a strange thing. I actually had a talk with it about with a group of women about how nostalgia is actually like a form of, it can be a form of depression almost. It can be this very backwards holding you into the past. You know, everyone's trying to move on from the past, but yet we're keeping items that represent the past. And it's like, what is that, you know, that emotional dichotomy that's taking place, you know, through that holding on to physical possessions that even if they represent something positive, like your wedding, or what represents something positive, like, you know, your graduation or whatever that means, it's like, why are you holding on to it when you're no longer there, you know? So it's like a good time to check in with some of those themes and to challenge some of those securities and to ask yourself why, and to dive deeper into what it is trying to reveal to you. But if we wanted to kind of move into the final understanding of some of the senses of Taurus and what it brings, it's like thinking about the five senses of influence and thinking about how we can bring those into our spaces to connect deeper with Taurus. You know, we had talked plenty about connecting with food and connecting to the growers of food in your local community. And then also to, you know, look towards your possessions, what you're hanging on to, what you can get rid of, what you can share with others. The resources that you have that you can share with others is always a great way of remediating some of the energy of Taurus. But if you're really wanting to connect with it, you can think about bringing in the types of food, you know, connected to your ancestral lands, the foods of sustenance, foods that were connected to maybe some of your family traditions. You know, Taurus is a very traditional sign. So it's like maybe cooking a dish that your grandmother used to cook, or that, you know, reminded you of certain types of, you know, I don't know, memories or associations with feeling well fed, you know, thinking about the love and the nurturance that comes through food and connecting with it in that way. And also just, you know, through the nature of Taurus, the bull being associated with the cow, a lot of cultures worshipped the cow and really gave the cow a lot of their admiration and veneration because of what the cow provides, which was milk. You know, it's like the cow provides milk, and that milk provides a certain level of sustenance and nourishment for the human body. Humans can really, you know, everyone kind of has a different relationship with cow's milk now because of the processes that it goes through. But when you think about the ancestral practices and kind of the lineage and the relationship that humans have had with cows, we've been, you know, feeding ourselves through cow's milk and cheeses and that byproduct of milk for millennia. And so much that they were worshiping the cow. So it's like thinking about stuff like that, as well as connecting with fruits. And when we think about Venus, you know, Venus is very, she's the female archetype, the goddess archetype, and she's associated with fertility. And when we think about the fruits growing on trees, that is the sign that's like our eggs and our ovaries. You know, those are the manifestations of eggs and fruits, and how you can connect with Venus through the consumption of fruit. And that's why fruits are always associated there. They always look like female genitalia. There's this, you know, there's a female representation that is very physical and visceral inside of just eating fruit, and also honey as well. Honey is being this kind of byproduct of the bees, and how, you know, sugar was oftentimes, you know, sugar was found and formed, the relationship with sugar, through honey versus sugar cane. So there's a lot of connection with Venus and Taurus through honey as well. So honeys, fruits, and any type of high caloric foods in terms of grain and ancestral sustenance, ancestral food sources, is a great way to kind of pull that in for your Taurus veneration. In terms of plants, we want to think about fragrant plants. So things like jasmine, things like orange blossom, that's what's blooming right now in the South. It's like the plants that bloom in the spring, that draw the bees, that create the honey. It's like that relationship between humans, bees, plants. Once again, it's like that's harmonious flow of sharing of resources. Those are the types of plants that you want to think about honoring during this window of time. And I just find that this is the time of year that the fragrant plants are in blossom or in bloom. Lilacs, somebody had posted beautiful pictures of lilacs. They don't grow here in the South, but they are associated with the land that I'm from up north. And so it's like just those aromatic blossoms are a great way of pulling that nature of Venus in, thinking about pollination and the pollinators and, you know, giving them a little honor. You know, it's like the bees are a very important part of our food systems and making sure that they are being venerated and being honored in that way. In terms of colors, if you wanted to pull in colors, you want to work with the pastel palette. So like the pale pinks and the pale greens, pale blues and lavenders. I always just think of tulips and I think of like the flowers that bloom in the spring and how we associate like the Easter bunny archetype with the colors of the eggs is another way of thinking about colors and bringing those into your direct environment to simulate this nature of Venus. Venus rules the metal copper, and she also rules over stones like rose quartz, green aventurine, chrysoprase, ruby and zoisite. Anything that has that really soft, muted pastel tone to it will often be associated with Venus. And, you know, also stones that are associated with the heart, because Venus rules over the heart center. So those are the elements of the minerals that you can bring in. I also always talk about seashells and clamshells too, because they're so Venusian, like, you know, the Aphrodite and the big clam, you know, standing in the ocean water, like holding the comb and the pearl. And there's that sense of the connection to the fertility of water. So you can bring in things from the ocean. And once again, a lot like fruits, like the shells often will resemble the female body in terms of our reproductive organs and whatnot. So there's a lot of strong Venusian energy associated with clamshells, but those are the influence that you can bring in to honor this time of the year and to ignite the nature of Taurus and to connect with the nature of Venus who rules Taurus.
Can I ask, as far as the physical body is concerned, where does Taurus and or Venus, like what parts of the body does that represent?
Taurus, the sign, rules the teeth, the mouth and the teeth. When we think about chewing food, you know, our ability to chew food, that is associated with Taurus, the bones of the teeth. Aries rules the head, and then Taurus rules the teeth. Venus rules the heart. But I kind of, you know, I feel like the heart correspondence is, while it is Venus's territory, it also has a lot of solar influence. Like there's a lot of influence that are, because the heart is the heart center. It pulls in so much connectivity to the other parts of the body. And like so many things are associated with the heart. But yes, other than the heart, you could think about the reproductive organs on the woman. That would be very, that's Venus's landscape, and Mars's landscape rules the reproductive organs of the male. So when we think about like the first house versus the seventh house of the zodiac, the first house being Aries, the seventh house being Libra, and then we think about the second house and the eighth house. So these are the axis points on when we're looking at Eastern, Western axes. They are both ruled by Aries Mars, Libra Venus, Taurus Venus, Scorpio Mars. So this is the foundational connection between male archetypes, female archetypes, but more importantly, female reproduction, male reproduction, and how they come together and create life. So the fundamentals of life, what it means to be human, are in the core principles associated with Mars and Venus, the ability to come together and to procreate, to create more humans. So that brings in a lot of information about the relationship between Aries, destruction, and Libra, creation. It brings in a lot of relationship with Scorpio, which is like the feminine watery archetype of Mars versus the Venusian earthy archetype of Venus and Taurus. So it's like we need water and earth, and we need male and female, creation and destruction, in order to do this thing called human. You know, it's like, in order to be human, we got to have these core things going on. And earth and water are part of that formula, as well as fire and air, destruction, creation, male, female, the duality. That's the fundamental of the framework of our existence.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you brought that through about the teeth, because I kept feeling just the last 2 weeks I've been adjusting my jaw.
Well, the jaw, jaw itself is associated with Taurus. It's like when you think about, like, I guess, like cows chewing cud, like that motion of grinding, that's all Taurus. The ability to provide your body nourishment and food, you have to be able to chew it up and to get it into digestible pieces ultimately. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Taurus will rule the teeth. If you are having say a sun in Taurus and it's getting a hard aspect from Saturn, and a lot of times it will manifest in terms of like things like toothaches or an abscess in the tooth, or, you know, burning the roof of your mouth will be associated with Mars to your Taurus ruler, which is Venus. Like, it can manifest in a couple different ways, but it tends to be like anything associated with the mouth and the teeth and the jaw, you will oftentimes see it in a transit to either the sign Taurus, the cusp of Taurus, or the ruler of Taurus. We're always kind of looking at your transits, like if there's a flare, as well as you should. It's amazing how, because there is a whole line of astrology that reflects, you know, the correspondences to the human bodies, the humors of the body, the health of the body, the structure of the body, the organs, the skin. I mean, everything is represented through astrology, to where that's kind of gives you the foundations of the connection of understanding. So it's like many people will be under very specific transits, and while it can manifest as in the external environment, it can manifest in the psychological environment, it can also manifest in the physical body and have a type of flare. It's funny, I just had a client reaching out to me. She's under a Saturn transit, and she's having a very literal Saturnian transit to her sun, where she's dealing with a lot of cramping, muscle cramps. And because Saturn contracts and he likes to tighten up tendons, and he will often manifest as those things. And I was talking to her about how when Saturn was squaring my sun, this was in like 2019, I had my first and a major case of sciatica. I'd never had it before, but it's so Saturn, that constriction of, you know, casing around a nerve to where it like creates this horrible pain. It's just so literal, so Saturn. So yes, many physical maladies will be manifested through very, very literal transits. You know, it's quite amazing, actually. Whenever I have Mars crossing over my ascendant into my first house, it takes place about every other year. And for the past 3 years, it literally manifested as a giant cold sore on my mouth from dealing with heat, because we deal with a very hot, volatile environment. And I do all of my own yard work and gardening. So I'll be out there in the dead of summer in the South doing hours worth of yard work, and it'll manifest ultimately as this giant heat blister. Now, I can do that all the time, but it's only when Mars is transiting my ascendant that it turns into an actual eruption of heat. So it's like, you know, it's just typical how these transits will manifest like that.
Yeah. Mars is like, hey girl.
And it's such a double-edged sword too, because it's like whenever Mars is transiting the first house, you feel physically motivated. You have the nature of Mars in your physical body. So it's like, I'm going to get out there. I'm going to do it. I'm going to work hard. I don't care about the heat. I'm going to go, go, go. And then it allows you to overdo it, to where then you manifest with the heat, because it's like a heat blister basically from being exposed to too much heat. So yeah, it's just that nature of Mars. It gives it, but you got to be careful with it, because you'll burn yourself literally.
I messaged you yesterday. I was like, okay, what represents mold in my chart?
And we are such under the direct, I mean, such a literal transit for, like, you know, pathogens, poisons. You know, we're dealing with Mars, Neptune. We also have Saturn in that vicinity. It's like everything's sort of piling up in this space of Pisces. And Pisces, it can just be, it's the fog, it's the mist, it's the nebulous. It's, you can't quite see it. So airborne viruses will often be represented by Pisces because of that. Yeah. Well, and it becomes the perfect storm, right? Because it's like being exposed to a mold toxin. It might not make you sick, but it'll certainly lower your immunity. And then that allows the cold virus to come in where normally you're immune to it. So it's like, it's all those environmental factors, the perfect allows for things to take place. So there you go. It's a literal Mars, Neptune, Saturn transit that manifests. I'm having manifestations of it too, but instead of being viral, it's very much associated with certain elements, dealing with some plumbing in my house and dealing with some certain water issues in my house. We also had a major storm that ripped through the south here, and it caused a lot of flooding in certain parts of the city. And it's like thinking about the infrastructure. Once again, we're dealing with elements of infrastructure with with Saturn in Pisces. It's like structures associated with water. We saw all of these bridges, the collapsing of bridges being a part of this theme. And these are just kind of larger, what's called mundane astrology. It's like just larger collective themes that are taking place that have to do with infrastructure, which is Saturn's domain and associated with the water element, and how we're seeing like a breaking down of that taking place in various ways. When you work from home, it's not just the place where you sleep at night, but it's the place that you do your work in. It's like, it's a huge disruption to think about things coming in and having to tear open things. And it's just, it's very daunting, but it's got to be done. So it's like, you just might as well get in and do it. I'm actually waiting for May to come, because May, in terms of the months of the year, May has really beautiful skies. So Taurus this year is going to be bringing really, really beautiful skies. When it's going to be one of the best months that we have astrologically over the course of the 12-month calendar cycle. It's like May is one of those little bright spots. So we've got both benefics in Taurus. We've got Venus, who rules Taurus, entering Taurus. We have Jupiter still in Taurus. We've got the sun will be in Taurus, Mercury will be in Taurus. And then the moon, you know, she transits the signs every 2.5 days. So she hits Taurus once a month. She's exalted in the sign of Taurus. So we're going to get this really beautiful 5-planet stellium in Taurus throughout May, right at the beginning of May. And it's just going to be a good time to take care of some of these things in order to, you know, when you think about working magically or working energetically with the nature of the signs, it's like Taurus is all about resources. You know, we talked about food as being the primary resource, but resources also manifest as things like money and prosperity and a flow of energy. And when we think about abundance and what it means to be abundant, everybody wants abundance. It's like Taurus is going to be the skies that bring some of that in. So you can work with it energetically to increase, you know, to do a little prosperity magic or to increase the flow of resources through your home and through your environment and free up the energy and free up any blockages that are taking place. So I'm going to be scheduling all of my my home things, my structural foundational earth things for some of those skies in Taurus, so things can, you know, be resolved as quickly and as guided by the cosmic forces as well as they can.
Well, this was fun. Right. Thank you so much for coming back on again. And do you want to share all your ways of getting in touch with you?
People can find me at my website, which is Kristen Urlacher, URLACHER.com. Or they can find me on Instagram, KU Astromagic or Kristen Urlacher. Yes, they can find me in those ways and reach out and get into contact. And if you'd like a reading or to set up a consult, my website has all that information.
Perfect. And I'll link everything down below. It's been such a fun exchange with people saying how much they've loved the episodes. And I've seen a difference in just paying attention to those things, just even for myself.
It's a good exercise of awareness. And it's a good way of honoring the cycles and honoring nature. You know, it's like, I think sometimes people think that they're honoring nature because, you know, they have their certain levels of understanding. But it's like, when you think about it in terms of shifting from one to the other, and what that feels like, it's that churning of gears, you know, it's that shifting of doing something different, because it's like, we like comfort, right? And as soon as things become comfort, they become passive, and then they become habit, and then they turn off. They're now unconscious. It keeps the consciousness going and keeps the keeps just enough of a change to create enough of a discomfort and a shift. Because as a person who works professionally with these kind of things astrologically, like I'm having to shift from Pisces to Aries to now Taurus, and then from Taurus to Gemini. And it's like, I'm viewing the long game, and I'm viewing the year ahead. And it's like, what can I plug into each of these months and each of these seasons in order to achieve my goals, and trying to optimize what the planets are lending themselves. And this is all a part of that work. This is kind of the fundamental kind of first stepping stone, is just to pay attention and to bring in the elements and to work with them in whatever way you feel called, and then to continue that work throughout the year. And that begins to condition the mind to the way that the ancestors used to live.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And then we'll see you guys next month. And you let us know how you like working with all of these tools and tips that Kristen is sharing with us today. We love hearing from you. You can contact myself or her. Love hearing your messages, and we will see you next time. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I look forward to hearing from you. Please share your comments with me on Instagram at @peoplecallmejess. Your continued support means the world to me. Please subscribe, rate, and review. Plus, share this episode with a friend or loved one that you feel would benefit from today's conversation. Thank you for listening.